Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the city council meeting for September 19th, 2017. The time right now is 7:03 p.m. Ms. Baker, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Rasmussen, Camp, and Gamble.
Thank you. And please let the record show that we heard from that I heard from Councilmember Cutaback earlier today. She's got a family member who's sick and she will not be here. Councilmember Hanford had already notified us that he would not be here this evening, so we'll consider those two as excused absences, and we will note for the record when Councilmember Davis enters the chambers. Councilmember Scarborough, will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item that we have on the agenda this evening is a presentation from the Washington State Auditor's Office for the Exit Conference. And please come on forward. And I'm sorry, I don't have your name here, so please introduce yourself. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Christina Baylor. I am the audit manager for the Everett Division of the Washington State Auditor's Office. It's my pleasure to be with you tonight to present the draft results of the city's 2016 audit. I have a number of documents we're going to be walking through tonight, so I'm going to go ahead and pass those out, and then we'll get started.
Thank you. If you could, please hand a copy to our clerk. Thank you. And just hand them straight down the dais. Any spares will come your direction on the end. Thank you.
Do you want me to leave one for the council members that aren't?
Yes, we'll go ahead and hand three over to the clerk so they can be given to their mailboxes. Thank you.
Alrighty.
Please go ahead.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we have prepared a packet of information for you that we'll go ahead and walk through. Just a reminder that everything we're going through tonight is draft. So if you have any questions, concerns, comments, please feel free to let us know. We do have a bit of a deadline that we're going to be working on releasing these reports to meet a federal audit deadline. So we'll walk you through that, and that deadline's 9:30. So our target report issuance date, which we'll cover, would be next week, so probably Monday. So included in your packet, we have included on the left-hand side a document called our Exit Conference Agenda. That is an agenda of every topic area that we're going to cover tonight, and we'll get started with those individuals that participated in the city's 2016 audit. On the left-hand side, you'll see a list of those individuals, but with me tonight, I want to introduce Matthew Heiss, who was the city's lead auditor for the 2016 audit period, and also Amanda Robinson, who served as the assistant audit manager and who supervised and helped us perform some of the work on the city's audit. So we are here to present the results of three different types of audits, and those audits are a financial statement audit, where the purpose is to look at the city's prepared financial reports for 2016 and express an opinion on those financial statements as to whether they're fairly stated and materially correct. The opinion on the financial statements is really important for cities. A lot of users will use that opinion to make decisions that may impact city business, such as bond rating agencies, so that's really important, and we are pleased tonight to present an unmodified opinion, which is a good, clean opinion. We also performed an accountability audit. The purpose of that audit is to express an opinion, is to take a look at the city's compliance with state laws, regulations, contracts, grant agreements, your own policies and procedures, and then just in general, does the city have adequate safeguarding of controls and making sure that all of the city assets are properly safeguarded. And then our third audit, which does not happen every year for the city, is a federal grant compliance audit. So whenever the city expends over $750,000 in federal funds in one calendar year, the federal government requires that we come in and perform an audit of those expenditures to determine whether they complied with the requirements of receiving the funding. We do have one audit recommendation report that we'll be going through tonight, and that is listed as a finding. We'll walk you through the reason for that and why it's at that level. But before we do so, what I want to do is turn it over to Matthew Heiss, who has some highlights that he'll share with you after performing the city's audit. Matthew?
Thank you, Christina. As Christina said, my name is Matthew Heist, and I was the lead auditor for the audit. Before I begin getting into the financial and the federal audit report, I'd like to just give some highlights that we like to just share some of the good things that happened during the audit. One of the first things I like to point out is that during this last year, the city experienced some transition with finance directors and within the staff there. And so one of the things that we were really impressed with was that the city here allowed a transition period between the former finance director and the current finance director, Becky. And anyways, this allowed for the city to be able to, for Becky to be able to get, to understand the city's operations and everything in the financial areas, and just be able to ease her into the role that she has. This made it easy for us to audit because then she was caught up with a lot of with everything that was going on, and we didn't have to try to piece together some information of what the former finance director had. So I'd like to congratulate the city for taking that approach, and that really helped us out in our audit and moving forward with that. Also, we'd like to thank Jamie Guyon, also, who's the construction document coordinator. One of the things that we were really impressed with is she maintains a budget spreadsheet of all the projects. She was for the single audit. We were doing the federal grants. This spreadsheet allowed her to track costs charged to the project and which costs are eligible for grant reimbursements if it was applicable. This is a best practice. I don't see a lot of, I do audit a lot of federal grants, and I don't typically see this a lot, and this helped it very easy for me to track what costs were coming in and going out and what they were charging to the granting agency. And again, this really helps with just the audit of the program to run real smoothly, to have no hiccups with it. So, and then Jamie was also very helpful in providing documentation timely, which also helps the audit costs stay lower too. So we just like to point those out. They did a really good job, and very thankful for the city in those things that we discussed there. So if you also like to pull out, it's in your packet, it's going to be the blue page, the front one there that we'll be talking about. This is the financial statements and the federal single audit report. The first couple of pages are just some stuff that's just the cover letters, table of contents. The real meat of the report starts on page 4 right here, and there's going to be a few different reports in here, so bear with me. There's definitely a few different reports that we go through. So, but this first one here is just really a cover page of what we are of the whole audit of the federal and the financial. So this is starting off with a summary of the results there. You know, it starts with the financial statements, and this is going right into going into internal controls over financial reporting. It starts with what we issued for the financial statements, which, as Christina was saying, is our opinion. And for the financial statements, it's an unmodified opinion, which is a clean opinion. And again, this cover sheet's kind of a spoiler alert for everything to kind of come. So you kind of know what's coming up. But then we talked about the internal controls, and we identify whether or not there are significant deficiencies or material weaknesses. Now, just so you know, all what that is just saying, were there any within the internal controls, were there any major problems or potential major problems? And the significant deficiencies would be the potential for major issues, and then the material weaknesses would be more of those, actually we've reached the major issues. I'm glad to say, as it states right here, we did not report any of those types of deficiencies or anything, so congratulations to the city on that too. The next portion talks about the federal awards. Again, it talks about the internal controls for there. The same thing with them, the same concept, the significant deficiencies, material weaknesses. And again, for this, we did not identify any deficiencies or anything with internal controls. And then the next portion right below that, and so we're on page 5 there, we do actually give an opinion on the compliance with the requirements. And so we did issue an unmodified opinion, which, again, that's a clean opinion. opinion, that's a good opinion, meaning that in all material respects, that the city did a great job with their federal grant and with everything. So as Christina did say, we did, one of the things is we did have to report one finding, and we'll talk a little bit about it, but kind of technicality behind it, of why we had to issue the finding. But it doesn't change, as we said, it doesn't change the opinion that we give on the audit, or it doesn't change what the significant deficiencies or whether the internal controls were big issues or not, because it wasn't. So this was a technicality issue that we had to end up reporting to as a finding, and we'll talk about that in a moment. The next part is just identification of the major federal programs. Right here, we just looked at the highway planning construction grant that the city had for 2016. And right below that is just the type of, tells you about the type A and type B programs. It's for us auditors on determining on what programs need to be audited. And then also it says the city did not qualify as a low-risk audit under uniform guidance. That really doesn't say anything about the city, except it's been, I think it's been since 2012 since we've had a single audit, so it's been a time period, and all what it is just a threshold for us to determine on how much we have to audit. That means nothing when you say C, do not qualify as a low-risk audit. It means nothing to do that. It had nothing to do with the city and what they've done. It's just how we have to make sure that we audit, how many programs we have to audit. So do any of you have any questions on that or anything? Okay, and just the next section, financial statement findings, we didn't report any, and then federal award findings and question costs. We'll go right into that right now, actually. So if we turn over to the next page there, this is the finding that we had to issue right here. And so just to give you a little description of what it was, is this was due to a clerical error during the process of requesting the reimbursement, and which made it and was overlooked during the review process. And so the amounts, what we're required to do is report as a finding anything that's over $25,000 of question costs. And so what happened was that it was a clerical error. The person preparing it inputted the wrong number, and it wasn't caught by the review process at that time. And so as you see, right up above is the heading for it. And it just says the city did not have adequate controls to ensure compliance with federal requirements regarding, and these are all the different compliance requirements. With this particular instance, it was just one instance that we noted, but it does kind of, with federal grants, it does spread across different compliance requirements, and so that's why you see it was with allowable costs, cost principles, cash management, and reporting requirements. And right here is just some information on the grant itself right there. You have, and then right below is the question cost amount, so how much we identified that was overcharged to the grant. The next portion of it is just the background about the grant, and so it was the total grant expenditures was just over $1.4 million. It was for the Woods Creek Road shared sidewalk project funded by the Highway Planning Construction Program, and the majority of the program expenditures were for the construction and purchase services. And then a little bit more information on what's required is the grant recipients must have internal controls in place to ensure compliance with federal requirements. Our audit focused on the city's internal controls to ensure cost claims for federal reimbursement reported for the grantor were accurate, complete, and adequately supported in accordance with federal regulations. And then there's a description of the condition. This is kind of where we really talk about what really happened. And at first it just kind of talks about kind of a little bit about regulations, about what they allow. And so the grant recipients are allowed to receive reimbursement for allowable program costs through the federal progress billing reimbursement process. These costs must be allowable, authorized in the grant agreement, supported in accordance with federal cost principles, and incurred and paid before submission to the grantor for reimbursement. So that just kind of gives an overall, this is what they're supposed to be doing for those four areas that we identified above there. But our audit found the city does have appropriate internal controls that does identify eligible and allowable costs by maintaining as of that spreadsheet that I talked about earlier earlier in the highlights there, which again I was very impressed with that I was able to identify it. It's just what happened was when they were preparing the reimbursement request, the wrong number was pulled into that reimbursement request, and thus it caused the question costs, and they weren't ever caught by the review process. So this was an isolated error. Also, we wanted to make sure you note that this doesn't show anything systematic, as we did review all the other grant reimbursement requests too during this, and we found no issues with that. It was just with this one that we looked at, and then we don't consider this. And typically, when you do see findings, we do looking at the control deficiencies and whether they're significant or material to the grant. And this wasn't. And as I said, this is purely off of technical. Is that we the uniform guidance, which guides how we audit the federal grants, requires us for anything that's over $25,000 for us to report it over as a finding. And so we did not consider any the control deficiency. We didn't consider it to be anything major or anything as a potential major problem. It says right there. We're also required to report. It just says that we're also required to say this issue was not reported as a finding in the prior audit either. So this hasn't been reported as a finding before. Before I move on, does anybody have questions on any of this?
Councilmember Gamble.
So I've heard you right. Basically, the best practice that was in place is what helped you find the issue. Is that what I heard?
It helped me. It definitely helped as
it made you identify it because you were using it. You said, "Oh, this is a good idea. Use this spreadsheet, this best practice," and that's what helped you identify the problem a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and during the audit process, that's what we do. We look at it, and it was very helpful that worksheet was there to help me identify that reimbursement had somehow had the wrong number in there.
So. We just pulled the wrong cell.
Yes, that's correct. Any other questions before I move on? So the next part is just the cause of the condition, essentially what we were talking about. So the engineering department relied on the review performed by several staff members and its granting agencies to determine if federal reimbursement requests were accurate. It was just the city made a clerical error in its reimbursement request. It was not detected before submission to the grantor. This created an advance federal funds of unsupported grant reimbursement requests. And then the effect of the condition and question costs, just talk about again about what the effects are, is that things like this can jeopardize the city's eligibility for future federal assistance because the city's established review process did not properly identify the error in the reimbursement request before the submission. There was a total question cost of $60,859 that were not supported as federal regulations required. And then the next one right here is just as we move on with it, we have a recommendation, and we recommend the city to follow its established internal control process to ensure federal reimbursement requests are prepared based on projects costs incurred that are allowable and supported as required by federal regulations. Further, the city should ensure amounts requested for reimbursement do not include amounts already received from the granting agency. And so the city also, since it is a finding, city does have the opportunity to have a response, and we did get that response from Becky, which shows right here. One of the things I do want to point out too, I think I failed to mention that earlier, that we did mention it also, is that once this issue was identified, staff did take the necessary steps to start to get the granting agency paid back. And that was, they were very on top of it, and they made sure that to do doing the right thing and making sure they got them paid back after they realized that there was that clerical error. So I also thank them there, and they also say it in their response. It is in the audit report, or it is in the finding there. We do state that for ourselves too. Then the auditor's remarks, we have our remarks there, and then any applicable laws and regulations that are that the finding surrounds theirs of what makes it applicable for findings. So any questions about that finding? I know there's a lot of information there, but I definitely want to make sure that we're giving a true sense of how this came about. And it was just a clerical error, and we were kind of just stuck in a place where based off the technicality of it, and the federal government wants us to report it, and mainly it's just for the reporting is for them to be able to see too, because they get these reports too, to see if there's anything that they have to recoup back. So fortunately for the city too, they've taken the steps already to correct that too. So but are there any other questions?
I don't see any. Thank you very much, Mr. Heist.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, and so we got some more reports to go over. And so this next one is just our internal controls and compliance report. It's got a long name there. But essentially what we are doing is that we're just looking at we don't give an opinion on the internal controls or compliance, but we do, we are required to look at internal controls and compliance, and especially internal controls in the areas that we are looking at over the financial reporting. And so our goal is not to identify all the, it's not to identify every single instance that there may be a significant deficiency or material weakness, or as I said, a major problem with internal controls. That's not the goal of this, but just with the areas that we're looking at. So there are some limitations with this report of what we do, because there may be some what we consider major issues with internal controls, but I'm glad to say that we didn't find any of those issues. So in everything that we did and looking at. So congratulations to the city too for that, for us not, we didn't identify anything of that matter. Compliance, on the same kind of note, we do some procedures to see if there's any major material non-compliance. Again, we don't look at every single thing that could be, but based off of what we did do, we didn't find any nothing major for non-compliance or anything. So congratulations to the city for that. And that was on page 11 there. As you can see, the highlighted areas there is kind of important things right there that give you the information too. Any of you have any questions on this specific report? So if you turn to page 13, this is the report on the compliance of the federal grant there. So again, these are just the first page is just some information about the report, management's responsibilities, our responsibilities. The kind of the meat of it's on page 14. If you turn over, and as I did say, we do give an opinion on the compliance. And so, as I stated before, it just says there, it says opinion on each major federal program. It says, in our opinion, the city complied in all material respects with the types of compliance requirements referred to above that could have a direct material effect on each of its major federal programs for the year ended December 31st, 2016. So again, it's a clean opinion. Good job on that. That's a lot of work. And if you've ever seen a federal program and the compliance requirements, there's sometimes quite a handful of compliance requirements. So pat on the back to those people who do put that together, because that's a lot of work to try to juggle all those compliance requirements. For the city's response to the findings, it does say it right there. Just reference that they that The city's response to noncompliance findings identified in our audit are described in the accompanying schedule, the federal audit findings and question costs, and we just went through that there. And then also, again, it talks about internal controls over compliance. We did not identify any deficiencies in internal controls over compliance that we considered to be material weaknesses. Again, they're the same concept. We looked at the internal controls over the areas that we're looking at. It doesn't mean that there might be potential major issues, but we did not find any. So congratulations to the city for that. Any of you have any questions on that report? Thank you for staying with me. I know there's quite a bit of reports here to go through. So
good.
And then I think this is the last one here, which is the financial audit report. So this is the one where we give our opinion on the financial statements. And again, the first page 16 there is just the manager's responsibilities, the auditor's responsibility. Page 17 is kind of where the meat of what you'd be interested in. There in the middle of the page, it's highlighted. It's our opinion. In our opinion, is a clean opinion that everything was presented fairly in all material respects. Now, as you can see right here, it's a little bit different. This says on the basis of the accounting described in note one, because the city is on a cash basis, and their standards are based off of the BARS manual that the state auditors has there. So based off of the BARS manual, they did everything correctly as they should. We are required to, because it is a cash basis, it's not in accordance with GAAP, which is generally accepted accounting principles, but our state allows cities or any entity to do either cash basis or to be GAAP, and so this is the but if they do it on the cash basis, the GASB and all those people, the people who make up these standards wanted us to because we're audited too, and they want us to put in an adverse opinion on the U.S. on the GAAP basis. This means nothing for the city. It doesn't affect anything as for the city or for anything about getting any bonds or anything or bond ratings or anything. It's just saying that that you don't use GAAP and that we don't give an opinion. We don't give an opinion on the GAAP. We have to give an adverse opinion on that. So do any of you have questions on that? I know it's kind of a technical and sometimes it can be scary looking at, but it really means it's just something we just have to say. Okay, and then we also do, if you turn to page 18 there, we do have a highlighted area there. There's some supplementary and other information that we do audit. Also, we give an opinion in relation to the financial statements. It's not an opinion just on those statements that we're looking at, but it's in whole as the whole of the financial statements. And again, that's the schedule of expenditures of federal awards. That's what we look at to help us determine which grants we have to audit. And then also you have the schedule of liabilities that's accompanied in there too. So our opinion on this in all respects is that it's fairly stated, or that it's also clean, that we didn't, that there was no issues with those either. So any questions on this report at all? And then kind of just turning to page 19, this is just the financial section. These are all the different schedules that everybody put together here, the finance department put together to make this us be able to audit that. And so you can see there's a few different schedules. So good job on them. It takes a lot of work and to do all these and to prepare them on top of their daily routines that they have too. So. And then right here is just the next page. Is the corrective action plan. So it is a federal audit, is that there's a corrective action plan that the city has to take. And they filled out, and as you can see, the city has already, as an anticipated date to complete the corrective action plan, it's already done. We've stated that a couple times. They've already talked to the granting agency and reimbursed them what they needed to. So that's that. If any of you have questions on the corrective action plan at all?
See none.
Okay, and then right here's just some listings about the state auditor's office, and our contact information and how to contact us there. And that's it for this report. Some of the other things I just have to communicate with you too is that in the financial report, there is no incorrect misstatements on audited financial statements. So just so you know that these are, we do feel that the financial statements are, that there's no uncorrected misstatements in the financial statements. There are no material misstatements in the financial statements corrected by management during the audit. So we're required just to say that too. And with that, I will just, any of you have any more questions before I hand it off to Amanda? All right, thank you for your time, and I'll let Amanda finish this off here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, Councilmember Gamble.
Okay.
Never mind.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Nope.
No, I was just going to say the highlight. So you're saying it was a good decision that we made to have the finance director kind of that overlay in between. I think that helped with the report.
Yeah, that it definitely helped them. It helped Becky with her transition into the role, and then also it helped us with our auditing, because as we had questions, Becky was able to answer those questions for us, as she had worked with the former director. So
yeah, I'll just add to that. Financial audits are the ones that we report the highest number of findings across the board, and a lot of those have to do with internal controls, and many times it's due to turnover. When you lose all of that experience from the prior individual and a new person coming in, it creates opportunities for things to get missed or changes to happen. The fact that the city made the decision to have that overlap, it kept intact those processes and it allowed that information to transition over to the new person coming in, and that's a really good result because we had no recommendations in the financial statement audit. So we really want to point out that is a really big highlight for this audit. So.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And before Amanda begins talking, I do need to identify for the record that Councilmember Davis entered chambers at 7:28 during Mr. Heist's presentation. Thank you, Mr. Heist. Amanda, please come on up and welcome Councilmember Davis.
Hello. I'm here to present the accountability audit report, and that's the yellow report in your packet. And the part of the report that really that you should be interested in starts on page 4. And as Christina mentioned, our accountability audit, we look at the city's controls over different public resources in compliance with any applicable state laws, regulations, and your own policy and procedures. During the planning part of our audit, we perform risk-based procedures to kind of identify those risky areas that we would like to look at during the audit. During our audit, we, up at the top, results in brief, we found that the city complied with all state laws, regulations, and contracts and agreements, as well as policies and procedures. During our planning, we identified 4 areas to review. 2 of those areas are follow-up procedures from the prior audit, where we had 2 management letters over the police evidence room and asset tracking or safeguarding assets. We are happy to announce that those are mostly resolved. We do have 2 X items for both of those, which we consider mostly resolved. X items are our lowest level of reporting, those are housekeeping items. And there should be a list in your packet of those. We also reviewed the city's disbursement system review, going through all the accounts payable, credit cards, any way the city expends funds, just getting an understanding of that whole system. And we did not have any recommendations there. We did have 1 item where there was an X item, that's also on that X item listed in the packet. And we're required by state law to look at financial condition, and we are happy to announce that we have no concerns with the city's financial condition, or we have no concerns that it's going to happen. Are there any questions over the report? This is a lot shorter.
I don't see any questions. Thank you.
Okay. On page 5, it just states that we also released the financial and federal audit report, which Matthew just went over. And then on page 6 and 7, just more information about the city and our office. Very similar to the financial audit report. Those are our audit reports. Any questions on the reports themselves?
Nice. No questions. Thank you.
I have a couple concluding comments to go over. Okay. Like Christina mentioned, our report publication, we're hoping it will be released on Monday. That way we can meet our federal deadline. The audit cost at the entrance or at the beginning of the audit, we quoted a little bit over $40,000, and we still are going to be within that. so we did not exceed any of those costs. As part of the report publication, you will be receiving an audit survey, and this goes over any communications during the audits, and just any feedback is really appreciated by our service organization. And your next scheduled audit will be conducted next year, and we'll be covering accountability, financial statements, and the federal audit.
I see no questions. Thank you, Ms. Robinson.
Thank you.
Anything further from State Audit?
No, we just really want to extend our appreciation to the city staff during the course of the audit.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I just want to thank the auditors for doing such a good job. It's always good to know that the city is on the right track. And I want to commend our city staff, in particular our finance director, who apparently is taking the reins of the city on quite well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, the next item that we have on our agenda is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter that is subject to a public hearing. Public comment is limited to 3 minutes per speaker. Is there anybody here that would like to speak to the City Council this evening on any matter related to the City of Monroe? Anybody at all? Okay, thank you very much. We'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Council? Councilmember Rasmussen.
Motion to approve consent agenda.
Second.
I have a motion to approve the consent agenda from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 5-0. Next item on the agenda is new business, item number one. This is AB 17-147, Lodging Tax Advisory Committee Funding Award Recommendations. Ms. Hassert.
Oop, where'd she go?
Could somebody check on Ms. Hassert, please? It's okay.
Thank you. Indulgence here. So basically tonight what we have in front of you is the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee's recommendations for 2018 funding. As you may know, we kind of revamped the process a little bit this year, where we did a lot more outreach to all the various organizations out there that might qualify for lodging tax funds. We actually held a couple of open houses and invited anybody who was interested to come in so we could talk about the application process, what is and isn't allowable for the money, etc. The Lodging Tax Advisory Board, when we did our projections on what we might have available for funding for next year, we targeted $110,000. And as you see, what's before you here actually totals a little under $99,000. After presentations and review of all the applications, the Lodging Tax Committee is recommending full funding for all the applications, all 12. And so that is what is in front of you. And if there are any other questions, I am happy to answer them.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
No questions. I'll make a motion to move to approve the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee recommendations as presented for the 2018 lodging tax grants in total not to exceed $98,673.
Second.
Yeah, I have a motion from Councilmember Rasmussen and a second from Councilmember Davis for the requested action as typed in Agenda Bill number 17-147 under the requested action. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is new business item number two. This is AB 17-148, ordinance number 021-2017, and this has been pulled. So,
well, that was easy.
Let me just verify here on my printed version, and I needed to pull that off. Next item on the agenda is council member reports. We'll go ahead and go down the line. Council member Gamble.
Let's see. So we're back into the school year. So we had I attended the first Monroe Public School Foundation board meeting on last Wednesday, as we look to set budget for the 2017-2018 year. he just made the announcement and published out on Facebook. Most people see that staff grants and stuff are open. We've got about $15,000 or more for staff grants for teachers to apply for if they need stuff, you know, funding for class projects that may not have been funded through the traditional process. That's open as we speak. Hope to have those done by in the October timeframe. Those are always really, really fun to do. And working on date and time to nail down for the auction in the spring, which you guys will all be invited to, everybody here, as we work to, towards raising more monies for the emergency needs. We did have a couple really good moments. We always do a share, you know, moment of stuff around the programs that we sponsor, and there was a couple, one in particular that Sue Skillen shared around you know, a team that we helped through the emergency needs program that we have through the foundation that was homeless, and were able to, you know, get them through and kind of connect them, and now they are through this last, the end of last year, and now are off into college. So quite the success story, and the very prestigious institution they're going to. So that always reminds you why you do that stuff. So that's that. And then we had football was out of town this last weekend, so no cultural event on Friday unless you traveled into the Everett area, Mariner High School. And they're 3-0, and I think we have potentially the big game of the week. There's the vote on King 5. If you haven't voted, vote early and vote often for the game of the week, where King 5 will come and televise from our great city of Monroe, if we can, you know, get it to be the number one game of the week. So hopefully that comes to fruition, and all of Western Washington local sports commentators descend on Monroe. That's it.
Thank you. Councilmember Kemp.
Well, other than the strange water that's been falling from the sky, I have nothing to report.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
I have nothing except that you can put down, I won't be able to make next week's meeting.
Okay. We'll mark you down as not being here next week. Thank you, Councilmember.
Thank you.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Apologies for missing last week. I was actually out of town for work. Was invited to represent our organization for a large leadership conference. So it was great to be down there, but hurried and got back, got a couple hours of sleep, and then helped prepare for the big game, which I'm not talking about the Friday night game. It's the Saturday night game, which is really the official kickoff to football season. I think Gambly got that wrong when I listened to the tape. That's right. So, Chief, congratulations to your guys out there, 4 in a row. I think they call that a dynasty at this point. So, it was a lot of fun. And
6-6.
Yeah, it was a little nerve wracking at first, considering the fire department came with a defensive score right in the beginning.
Interception,
probably about 60 yards down, ran it all the way. So everyone kind of thought we were in for a good game at that point, but the police definitely pulled it out. So well done again, and I know we're working on the plaque coming to you. So. After that, I had a chance to swing over to the club and talk to the team doing the open house for the Parks Master Plan, and that was really cool to see and visit and see all the ideas and that the community has really sprouted up and generated. So I know Michael probably talk about what the next steps are, but I'm really, based off of what I saw, really looking forward to seeing all those ideas and plans come to place and before us here in council. This Thursday, remind council that the East County Job Fair is coming back, and it's at the Boys and Girls Club through the Monroe Chamber. And I know you've heard me mention this before, but just to remind everyone again, the East County Job Fair was something that was created thanks to the city and the chamber partnering together to do business tours and answering that need of businesses can't hire people because they're not getting the applications. And so the partnership with the city chamber and A space at the Boys and Girls Club East County Job Fair was created, and it continues to be a success. So thanks to the work of Mayor and our city staff for keeping that going in partnership with the Chamber. And then finally, just some feedback. I listened to the tapes to catch up on the meeting, and the regular portion of the meeting when everyone was up here was great, loud and clear, but the study session down there was difficult to hear, and so I'm sure that I'm not the only one, and something's being looked at to take that on, but just a little feedback on that. So
we're looking into that.
Excellent.
Thank you.
That's all I have.
Okay, Councilmember Gamble.
I forgot to mention, across the street from the Boys and Girls Club on Saturday is the Monroe Youth Football and High School auction. To be the auctioneer is G. Scott. Recognize that name is 710.
Right.
Radio person, I think, friends with Michael Bumpus. So great up. There's a ton of really good auction items up there. All of the proceeds go to Monroe Youth and the high school.
Is that at the Senior Center?
Tickets at the Senior Center this Saturday. Tickets are available online, I still believe so. So for all those that are interested in really cool stuff to be auctioned off, including trips and a lot of autographed stuff from Husky legends and Seahawks legends. So anyway, forgot to mention that.
So. Thank you very much. Councilmember Scarborough.
Nothing to report other than going to the game. I thought maybe it was going to be at least close after the during the first quarter, but obviously it got the other way. But fun was had by all.
Thank you very much, Councilmember Scarborough. We'll go ahead and go out to staff. We have a staff report this evening from Mr. Swanson from the Community Development Department. Mr. Swanson.
Great. Thank you, Mayor, Council.
Thank you.
So in your packets are the monthly report for August 2017. Before I start on that, I just wanted to clear up if there's any rumors going on out there that city staff received a number of phone calls regarding the old Albertsons building because they're paving the parking lot. And so a lot of people are wondering what's going in there, and there's some rumors going around about what stores are going in there. We have not received any pre-applications, phone calls, or anything happening in that area. So we don't have any development applications, but that's been the flavor of the last 2 weeks, are multiple phone calls on what's going in there and what's happening, and rumors starting up. So I just wanted to clear that up, that we don't have any permit applications or pre-apps for that site. Diving into the community development report, just to highlight a few things. So we did have a pre-application meeting for the last of Main View's Eaglemont 4. And so that one is to date the last property they own. And it's just, I believe you got 16 lots, and it's right there if you know where the big detention pond is down there. So they came in, and then actually subsequent to this, in September, they submitted for their preliminary plat, so they'll be moving forward with that. Another thing, as you mentioned, the rain hit, and so the developers are scrambling right now. They had a really nice summer to get things moving, get a lot of progress done. Unfortunately, as everyone knows, working in the rain is difficult, whether that's building a home or clearing grading on a site. And so we anticipate, you know, some slowing with the single family permits, but still, you know, going along at a fairly consistent rate with that. One thing I did add, and this is on page 4 or 7 in your report, is a historical trend of the single family permits issued. And went back to 2007 with this up to 2017. You'll notice in 2017 is roughly 19 single family permits to date. As of August, we issued 111 single family permits. Another thing, because I worked here in 2011, I went back and found out that at that time there were 11 staff members in the Community Development Department. Today there's 9. And so it was a larger department with less permits as we are today. We're actually with the hiring of the new permit tech that council approved that 0.5 position for, are actually sitting in a good spot. You know, people are working a lot to keep up, but we know things come in ebbs and flow, so we're just taking this high point, working through it, and as things slowly start to taper off, dedicating more time towards the development of the new regulations. So with that,
before you move on, Councilmember Gamble.
So you mentioned the Eaglemont, the last part. You said 16 lots.
Correct.
That's, you said four. I thought it was Eaglemont 5 is 16.
Oh, I'm sorry, I misspoke.
But I just wanted to make sure I had, because okay.
Yeah.
Didn't know if it was on the map wrong or.
No, no, I misspoke.
So the because I didn't see that in the I saw it on the map, the five on the map, but I didn't see it in the report.
So that was in the pre-application meetings.
Ah, there, so I missed it.
Barghausen.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the engineering firm.
Great. That's probably why I missed it. Thank you.
Sorry, you're welcome.
Other questions? Go ahead and continue.
That's all I had. Just okay. A brief overview.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks.
Next item that we have that is a presentation from staff is from the Parks Department. Mr. Farrell.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. So, yes, as was mentioned earlier, we had a great turnout on both on Friday and Saturday at the Boys and Girls Club. That was like the main headquarters of the master plan studios and open houses. And then we had the satellite out in Tide Park. And we had a great turnout on both days. The weather cooperated, so we had a pop-up tent. If you know where the Four Square Court is between the playground and the beach area. So we were capturing people using the playground, going to the beach, walkers, looping around the trail. So we had a diverse number of park users that were able to participate. And we actually had folks that would give their input out there at Lake Tai, and then they came either later that evening or the next day over at the Boys and Girls Club because they wanted to see more of the maps that were on the wall, which was like I said, it was kind of like a headquarters there. So we had a steady stream of people throughout both days. So the consultants were pretty pleased with that, and they were also fairly pleased with the response so far from the survey. So they're going to keep that going probably through next week's joint meeting. They haven't really set a date yet to close down that survey, so we'll continue to promote that. I don't have numbers other than I know it's several hundred on the surveys, and I would expect, just kind of from what I experienced, a few hundred people at those open houses. So the consultant, it's HBB, Landscape Architects from Seattle. They're condensing all the data and ideas that the community brought forth, and they will present the preliminary ideas to both the council and the park board in the joint meeting that's scheduled for next Tuesday. And in your packets that you'll be getting for the week, you'll for next week's meeting, you'll have a lot of maps and a lot of concepts and preliminary ideas to pour over ahead of the meeting. So it's pretty exciting stuff. Next steps after that would be refining the concepts, with your feedback and more review and public input, and then ideas to have council adoption of the master plans by January. And then also I just want to report the monthly unmarked trails inspections, and we averaged last month about 8 labor hours per week that we spend walking through in Al Borland area and Sky River area along the river there, and had averaged 11.6 as far as bags of litter collected. So you know, the odd debris and materials too, so not necessarily bags, but that's what we average. And then this past month averaged about the same, so it was 8.8, up a little bit on the hours, and then the number or the litter and garbage is the same. So, and then we've been from time to time still come across an encampment. It's usually pretty fresh, and contact the police per our, you know, the policy that we have, and they get the services when they encounter people in the parks there, and the parks cleaned up right away. So that's what I have to report there, and that's all.
Thank you so much, Mr. Farrell. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. So are you, that four-wheel drive vehicle, is that just for police use, or is that for parks use as well?
The UTV, is that what you're talking about?
Our parks folks are usually just walking through.
You just walk through?
Yeah, so then you can kind of hear stuff too. But I know the police utilize that for
For some reason, I thought the parks department was using that, but it's just police.
Don't you guys have one? I think you have something similar to it.
It's not as four wheel capable curving ball fields, so it's a little bit lower to the ground. But yeah, it could work in a pinch.
Okay.
But I know the police have been doing a lot of evening patrols at the parks too.
Okay.
And they touch bases with us as well, and not just on those trails, just in our various parks.
Okay.
So we really appreciate all the patrol they're doing for us.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Scarborough.
I'm not sure this question should be directed to you or when it's your turn, Chief. And some of the people have expressed the question about, you know, you hit on it a little bit, do we patrol the parks at night? We go in and, you know, we flush them out of there during the day, we find out they're a problem, we offer them services, some avail themselves to it, some do not. What happens to the ones that do not? Maybe you can answer it when you're up. And then some questions that come to me is, we all know they go back in there at night, make a mess, sleep, and then start all over or evade during the day. I don't know if you have the answer again or if the chief does.
I can give you a little bit of feedback that I've been getting from the crew and just my observations when I'm out there looking around at things too, is that I wouldn't say that every time, you know, that someone's moved out of the park, they move right back that night. I'd say in a lot of cases, especially in certain sites and areas of the parks, you can tell by the evidence that, you know, people aren't just coming right back and camping. But as far as everybody, but it still keeps popping up, you know, and so we do find it in various places, but we don't seem to find the same things. And I gotta say, just. This is, you know, I'm not keeping numbers on it, but I mean, through the whole master plan process, I've met a lot of people, and a lot of people that walk in those parks, and they were, and also around Lake Tai, and there was somebody was mentioning about how you know, they appreciate what the staff does, both parks and police, to keep the parks clean, and they're feeling better about walking through the parks.
Thank you. Chief, did you want to add anything at this point?
Well, first of all, I'd add that the parks are closed at night. There isn't supposed to be someone anywhere in there. Second is that if there are people spending the night or campgrounds, you're usually far off the roadway. So we'd have to walk in. And the manpower we have right now doesn't give us the luxury of being able to have people walk the park trails at night.
Thank you.
So
thank you.
I would also add that staying overnight in the parks is an arrestable offense, and we arrest them. It's not like they're on DOT property where we give them warnings to vacate because it's posted.
I think the one person I talked to questioned why didn't we arrest these people when they were in there at night, when they're not supposed to be, because it's an arrestable offense. And, quote, why don't you leave them in jail for 30 days if they can't get their needs for 30 days? Maybe they will think twice about where to live. That's the comments I'm getting from some citizens around as I walk. For your information. So I wanted to be able to have an answer for those questions when I get. Thank you.
30 days in jail is about $2,000.
This particular person really didn't care how much the cost was. I tried to express to him that every time we got somebody, and they said, oh, I'm feeling like I'm having a heart attack. And we take them to the hospital, it costs us $5,000. And his first comment to me was...
That's not correct. It doesn't cost us.
Okay.
But jail does cost us.
Yeah. And his comment was, maybe if you make an inconvenience for them now, they won't want to be here. Who cares what the dollar figure is? And then the first question he asked me was, what are you going to do to lower my taxes? Yeah. I went into this, you want to spend money on this, or we want to...
I can give you an example. This week, in fact, it occurred. A female got out of jail after spending 20 days in jail, and the next day we arrested her. Same place, same thing. That's why we have a social worker trying to get them into programs.
This particular,
hopefully that's the answer.
I agree, and I like it. I couldn't make this person understand anything about the social worker.
Okay. Thank you very much. You too. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, no, I would just say that, I got to commend all the efforts that have been going forward since we instituted the new policy, because I know that things are changing and the narrative is changing. When I don't comment on social media because of the different things that we have, in place and public meeting stuff and all that, but I do read. And when I noticed the narrative changing to when someone posts something about a park, and then now there's people posting, oh no, it's better, or hey, did you notify the city, because they'll get somebody right out there. I didn't used to see that stuff. But end of last year, all that kind of stuff. So it definitely is making it is. I really appreciate what the Parks Department is doing, what you're doing. I appreciate these reports. And the chief, I know even just this last week we had more reports of encampments within the state land. I know that that's a different one for us, because it's not something, it's not our property, it's not a city park. But what I love about the attitude of the police department and just the city in general is we don't throw our hands up and say, it's not our problem. They actively go and engage and go after it. I think, if I'm not mistaken, over the information we got, we actually made some arrests this week, which is great. And then trying to link people into programs and posting, the trespassing and all that kind of stuff. So really do appreciate it. I know that the city or the citizens appreciate it. I talked to several of the folks that turned the information into me directly, and they really appreciated the efforts and can see the difference. So thank you.
Thank you.
If I might add, you're just bringing up about what the tracking that we're doing is, I just want to just reiterate that this is walking the unmarked trails. So in addition to, like I said, the 8 hours a week,
yes,
they are daily going into the parks. There's a roadway, there's trash cans, they're at El Borland, there's Lewis Street Park, the restroom, there's the Sky River Park around the restroom there, and behind the south lot there. So there's a lot more time spent in those areas just performing the daily maintenance as well.
I appreciate that.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. I definitely do appreciate the partnership with the parks and the police and what your departments are doing. And not to reiterate previous conversations, but I do want to add, Mike, on a different topic, that in regards to the master plan, the efforts of outreach that you and the rest of the staff have done on that. I know that's been come up even last week and in many previous conversations, and just based off of what I saw and in conversations before, that those outreach efforts are paying off, and it's good to know that they're continuing keeping the survey open and so forth. So thank you for that.
Keep it up. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Anything further, Council? Mike, thank you very much today.
Thank you.
Going out to the rest of staff, Mr. Worthen.
Yeah, if you have one thing, the Salary Commission met on August 24th last month to go over the annual review of the compensation of the mayor and the council members. They reviewed comparable cities and had a general discussion. All four of the commissioners were there, and they voted unanimously to keep the compensation the same in 2018 as it is. So, any questions? I will meet with them again next August.
Thank you, Mr. Worthen. And we've already gone through Mr. Farrell, Mr. Swanson, and Ms. Hassert.
Nothing further.
Okay. Chief, anything further tonight?
Tomorrow night is the first night for the Citizens Academy, and I think we have a full crew there. So.
Great. Excellent.
Cool. All right. Anything else? All right, we'll come on up here. For me, you'll see Monroe this week. One of the things that this night, and I did last week, was met with Senator Pearson. We went ahead and caught up after the 2017 state legislative session. We talked about some of the legislative priorities that that we had in there. We talked a little bit about some of the things that we're working on with the state right now, including reestablishing 191st Street and how we're working on getting the approval from the Department of Transportation. I let him know that we'd go ahead and follow up with him. We also talked about the need to expand tools to address homelessness and combat drugs, and then also talked about the need to look at state law and see if there are ways to help cities annex areas in our urban growth areas. Of course, I talked to him also about State Route 522 and about the $100,000 in the capital budget for synthetic turf fields at Lake Tye, thanking him for both of those. And then I also filled him in on how the meeting went with the governor the week before. We also had a ribbon cutting at Garlic Jim's on Thursday last week. Had a few people there, and it was nice seeing another business here opening in town. And I think that's just about it for now. Ms. Knight.
So on the upcoming agenda for September 26th, we have three issues that will be primarily focused on. It'll be the presentation from Jeff Ketchel from the Health District, and I talked to Mr. Ketchel about his presentation and expressed the council's desire to see a business plan in addition to a report around what the Health District has been doing in the community. It's my understanding he's been working with Councilmember Rasmussen to pull some of that data together. So I appreciate that assistance. We are also going to be having the first read for the Raspberry Hill rezone. So that'll be the first read on that. That'll be a quasi-judicial action. And then finally, the majority of the meeting is going to be around the joint meeting with your planning board to talk about the master planning process. So any questions about upcoming agenda?
Okay. Councilmember,
for extended agenda.
The extended agenda for October 10th, I just wanted to point out that that is going to be when the legislative priorities are coming back to you for discussion.
Okay.
Any questions on
that? Councilmember Gamble?
Extended agenda. I have two meetings that I may be out of town on business. It would be the 10th and the 7th of November.
We'll go ahead and mark you down as being out the 10th and when of?
The 7th of November.
The 10th of October and the 7th of November.
That's correct.
Okay. And we anticipate that there may be a cancellation on November 7th.
Oh, that's what I was going to say, is because I did have that circled, as we've always canceled that every...
Which would like to make.
I was going
to
make the motion. I want to make the motion to cancel the... November 7th City Council meeting.
Sorry. I have a motion to cancel the November 7th Council meeting from Councilmember Gamble with a second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. This night, next week, the proclamation. Do we know if Kathy Coffey will be here to be a part of that or possibly receive it?
I haven't been contacted by anybody from the leadership of Snohomish County. Would you like me to reach out?
I think it would be great if we could.
Sure.
Because that's where it's coming from. Yeah.
Mm. I'll follow up.
Yep. Okay. Anything further? All right. Anything further?
The only thing I wanted to add is Mr. Swanson mentioned what's happening or not happening, I guess, at the Albertsons. And we did have a meeting with the commercial brokers for that property and talked with them at length, drove them around town to show them exactly what's going on in Monroe and give them a better flavor for the types of communities that are being built now up above the Albertsons site. Talked to them a little bit about the improvements that are being made on the site, so the parking lot paving that's happened. It's interesting because the feedback that we got is that Monroe has a reputation of being a great place to come and open a new business, so that's good news that we don't have to kind of overcome that resistance to begin with, and that the owner of that particular complex is very interested in a long-term commitment in Monroe. So they're not looking to just get in and kind of turn that property right away. They really want to see something made of it. And because they've been having such a difficult time finding a long-term tenant to come into that building, they are actually talking about doing some tenant improvements to it, specifically maybe dividing it up into two separate structures and then doing some facade improvements in addition in order to attract somebody to come in. So that is one of the first of several meetings that we have set up with commercial brokers in the community to better understand what it is that they need from the city of Monroe and how we can help them market their properties.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. If there's nothing else, we do have a need for two executive sessions. The two executive sessions, yes?
Just one.
Go ahead.
There's no pricing of property.
Oh, okay.
I apologize. I thought I heard you.
It's okay. So we have a need for one executive session. This is agency litigation, pursuant to RCW 42.30.110, subsection 1, subsection little I. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and call it for 5 minutes, and we'll extend if necessary. Okay.
And for the record, Mayor, I don't anticipate action following the council's reconvention and open session except to adjourn the meeting.
Okay. So I only expect the adjourning following the executive session. Thank you very much. We are now in executive session. Thank you. Okay, we're back on the record. We're now out of executive session. The time right now is 8:24. We have no further business this evening. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Councilmember Rasmussen has made a motion to adjourn. Second by Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion to adjourn? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening. We are adjourned.